I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London, what else is new? But grayer still in the on Merseyside because yes. Everton being docked 10 points. We're going to get into that. Don't worry, guys. We'll also talk about Brazil, Vinicius's injury,
Gabi's injury. Everybody's injured.
It's a concern. Yeah. Haaland's injured, but he's going to be fine. Don't worry. But let's start with Everton. Now, I'm going to try to explain this quite simply, as best I can. The Premier League have these rules called PSR, profit and sustainability rules.
Yeah.
And essentially, they govern how much money you can lose over a three-year period. For the three-year period that Everton got in trouble, which covers a season up to 21-22, so 19-20, 20-21, 21-22, they could lose about 105 million over those 3 years.
Yes.
According to the Premier League, they ended up losing 124 million. I should also point out, before people say, oh, COVID and this and that, yeah, there's a whole bunch of exclusions, special accounting, special circumstances to take into account. So there's this discrepancy, and they've been docked 10 points. A lot of people are looking at this. All right, first of all, Jules, on Everton, right?
Mm-hmm.
My take is I'm not an accountant. I haven't gone through it. I am in no position to say whether they breached or not, on how much they breached for. I don't think anybody
Well,
they clearly did.
They went over the limit that they could have. They're arguing that in their accounts, they calculated that they only went over for 8 million, not 20 million.
Right. So they're over, right? So they that part's over. Not in
Which I think they agreed. I think they've accepted and they've acknowledged.
Right. But they're appealing against the 10 points.
Yeah, they think this is too severe, too harsh for the breach that they've had. Whether it's 8 million or 20 million, they consider the 10-point deduction, which is the heaviest we've ever seen in Premier League history. For example, when Portsmouth went bankrupt, so that's not when they overspent. They went bankrupt, Portsmouth.
I mean, right, they became insolvent.
Yeah, they got a 9-point deduction.
But that was, but again, I think
that was
a long time ago.
But
also, that was under different rules. Portsmouth didn't breach profit and sustainability rules. They breached rules on solvency. So I think we have to remind ourselves that there's these new rules.
Yeah.
They're in effect. In the case of Everton, we can get into it a little bit more, but certainly one thing the Premier League are briefing is that, because obviously if you're, the calculation's over 3 years, so you kind of can project ahead, you can kind of estimate which way you're going.
Yeah.
That time and again, Premier League said, hey, Everton, careful, you're going to go over, don't do this, don't do that.
Transfer windows, your wedge bill is big, blah, blah, blah.
And the point is, they breached. But the broader question here is, a lot of people are saying, oh, look, the Premier League, they're tough, they're flexing.
Yeah.
This doesn't bode well for Manchester City, who have 115 charges against them. And for Chelsea, who do not have charges against them, but are being investigated after they self-reported a whole bunch of illegal payments in the Roman Abramovich era.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And you will explain how different the City case is to this Everton one, which the Everton one is actually quite straightforward, right? This is how much you can spend. This is how much you spend. You spend too much. You were not allowed. This is the sanction that you're going to get, whether it's a fine. Although it was an independent commission. So it's not the Premier League directly that sanctioned Everton.
They named people to this commission.
There was a panel. And the panel said, listen, we don't think that a financial fine, just a normal fine, is enough when the club like Everton is supported by someone with a lot of wealth. Basically, Farhad Moshiri, who spent £750 million.
Of his own money, because it's definitely all of Farhad Moshiri's
money. It doesn't matter
where
it comes from, but he spent a lot of money since he took over the club, in 2016, 2017?
Right.
And they're saying, if we just give you a normal fine, this is not enough. Hence the point of deduction.
The problem I have with that is you kind of go down a rabbit hole, because the 10-point deduction as well, if you say, well, we don't want to fine him because you have a rich owner and he can pay it. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
But let's say Arsenal had violated these rules. Let's say Arsenal had been fined, had been docked 10 million last season, right? When it would have made a difference,
10 points.
They would have just dropped from second to fourth. They'd still be in the Champions League. The only thing that would have changed to them is they would have made a little bit less money on off the TV contract. And there's another question, there's another point here, which, by the way, is why Leeds, Southampton, Leicester City are are threatening to sue the Premier League is saying, wait a minute, like, what about us? We're the aggrieved party. They overspent in the year that they were competing against us and that we went down.
Yeah.
So I think they have a strong case there. I don't quite know how the Premier League writing the rules. I think they've opened. I think it's really good that there's more oversight, but I think it's going to be difficult to navigate the rules. All right, Jules. So I want to explain why I think the City and Chelsea cases are completely different.
Yeah.
And why we shouldn't see this 10-point as some kind of bellwether, right?
It's not. But you agree that it looks like the Premier League are flexing and they're saying, like, hang on, to whoever is going to mess up with the rules, we're going to be really tough.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, let's take a step back. This is a big departure. So Richard Masters, so far, since taking over, we kind of thought of him as, you know, he was a salesman, he was a commercial guy. If you look at him, he kind of, as my friend puts it, he has like the footballer's haircut, even though he's a man in his 40s, I think.
I would think so,
maybe, if not more. And he was seen as, because he followed Richard Scudamore, who was viewed as, you know, the absolute genius built up the Premier League, I think a lot of people view Richard Masters as kind of lightweight. He didn't speak often. He didn't say much what he did. But I think it's very obvious that under Scudamore, the attitude of the Premier League is like, hey, if your money's green, you can show up. You can buy into it. We're going to be a very, very light touch in terms of regulation, right? That's why Roman Abramovich, Thaksin Shinawatra, all these guys come in, they buy into the Premier League. Nobody really cares where the money's from as long as you remain solvent, as long as you can pay. Here come the Glazers. Look, they're going to do a leveraged buyout and load up this iconic club, Manchester United, with an enormous amount of debt. And by the way, I'm just going to explain this quickly for those who still don't understand what they did. The Glazers got a bank to loan them a bunch of money so that they could buy Manchester United. And then they shifted that debt from themselves onto Manchester United, which is normal in private equity, less so in football, right? All this stuff happened under Scudamore. He didn't really care, right? No. As long as the investment.
He should have cared a bit more.
That's what a lot of people feel. Certainly United fans feel that way. I think now, though, things have changed a little bit. And I think they want more regulation. And the reason they want more regulation is, first and foremost, this idea that of investment, oh, look, you know, we can sustain losses for a long time. I think they know that nobody normal can sustain losses for a long time, right? You know what? Not even Saudi Arabia or Qatar or Abu Dhabi. This is not going to happen. So at some point, there's always a risk it's going to come crashing down. You have to turn these into real businesses to some degree. The other thing is, obviously, if a club becomes insolvent, then you can have a chain reaction. And the other thing is, and this is the problem with football, this is the Premier League is the most successful football league in the world, right? By far.
Yeah.
The most commercially successful as well. Yeah. And yet, as I've pointed out before, in 8 of the last 10 years, they made an operating loss, which you realize how worse off everybody else is, right?
Yeah.
So at some point, you have to try to contain costs to make to keep making the business investable, right? People talk about franchise values. Oh, look, the value of Aston Villa is this much. It's completely meaningless unless somebody's willing to pay that amount, right?
Yeah.
And as we saw with Liverpool, as we saw with Manchester United, when they went up for sale, they wanted $8 billion, whatever, or whatever, $4 billion, whatever the valuation was.
Billion.
They didn't get it. They did not get it, right? So you put these things together. So they want to have a better oversight. So, and they want to show that they can actually take action. Now, if you were really cynical, and I touched upon this before, I don't see why, I'm not an accountant, but I don't see why this is so freaking complicated that you couldn't have adjudicated this case last season.
This Everton one, the City one or the Everton one?
The Everton one.
Okay.
Everton's accounts closed on June 30th, 2022, right? Now, it might have taken some time for them to put them together, but even then, you're the Premier League. You're the independent panel. You can say, guys, accountants, nerds, get your calculators out and get us these early because we want to adjudicate this case by Christmas, or we want to decide if we need to charge you by Christmas.
Yeah.
We want to have everything wrapped up because that would have been the fair thing to do.
Yeah.
Because Everton's breaches benefited Everton mostly last season.
Yeah.
And hurt those other three clubs.
Yeah, to stay up. Yeah.
So I think one lesson learned here is change the rules whichever way you need to change them, but have it so that if you have a breach like this, in a case like this, that you can go and you can judge it straight away, right?
Yeah. It always takes a long time, though, doesn't it?
But it or shouldn't.
Your friends, the lawyers, it takes a long time.
Of course. And it takes even longer if, in case of city, they try to go to high courts to stop things or whatever. But this is a very simple, straightforward. This is not a complicated case if you have the information and time. You just say, listen, we have to have this. We have to have it because there's another legal concept, which is justice delayed is unfair to Leeds, to Southampton, to Everton, to Leicester, to everybody.
Yeah, but there's a few hearings where you need to let that club prepare for it. For example, there was a hearing where Everton, there was something about the new stadium and the loan that you have to repay to the bank on the new. They thought that maybe you could put that in, that you could not put that in, all of that.
Right. Well, then when the Everton nerd goes and he puts in his numbers, he's like, oh, can I put this in here? Let me call the Premier League nerd. Hey, Premier League nerd, can I put this in? Is this an allowable expense? Yes? No? What do the laws say? And again, maybe the regulations aren't as clear as they should be. Other lawyers have argued that. Fine. Make the regulations better.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody's been helped by this. Sean Dyche hasn't been helped by this.
No, certainly.
Now, all this said, I think Everton are going to stay up. They're in a much better position this year than they would have been.
So they went from 14th to 19th in the table, level on points with Burnley, who are bottom 20th, just better goal difference. Like they have -3, everybody else around them has -20 or something because they were there for a reason.
And they're helped by the fact that Luton and Sheffield United, they look on paper, they look very, very weak teams because they haven't spent as much as other clubs that have come up. So this is a season where you might be able to stay up with 29, 30 points, right?
Yeah. And also that overspending on the transfer window especially still benefits them now, right? Okay, they had to sell Richarlison and Gordon to make those accounts better, which I know they're big losses for them in terms of talent. But they were still the players that they still bought a year ago, 18 months ago, 2 years ago, who are still here, we still help them this season not to go down.
No question. So the reason the City case...
Yeah, why is it different?
...is different is with Everton, you're talking about an accounting breach, right? Everton's defense is, well, we accounted for these this way and we think the punishment is too much, but we acknowledge that we breached.
Yeah.
With Manchester City, these charges relate to mostly those charges that got Manchester City banned for 2 years by UEFA.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that ban was overturned by CAS, who found that some of those charges were not proven and some of those charges were time barred. Now, these charges are not time barred in the Premier League, which means there is no statute of limitations. So even if you committed a crime in 1932, then you're liable.
Yeah.
Right. So that means that we're in uncharted territory legally. There is no previous jurisprudence for this. I mean, there isn't much for Everton, but there's even less in the same case. Yeah. Two, what we're talking about effectively with City is Premier League charges relate to City supplying false information. This is a case of fraud.
Yeah.
This is what they're accused of, right? If you can prove that, you're proving that you're cheating. You're not saying, oh, let me put this cost in this accounting column, right? And see if the tax people agree with it or if the auditors agree with it. We're talking about, let me lie about this. Let me go and secretly make a payment without reporting it. Ha, ha, ha. Let me go and get money secretly from Abu Dhabi and pretend that it's... This is what they're accused of. This is what you have to prove, which is a very serious charge.
But if that's proven, it's worse than what Everton did, right?
It is a lot worse, and it's a completely different type of crime.
Yeah. So when people, even if they try to compare, if Everton get done 10 points for what they did, which is, like you said, a different offence, if City do worse, you would expect a worse punishment, even if it's a different style of breach than the Everton run.
Yes, you would expect, I mean, it's hard to rank the two, but it's completely different, though.
Yeah.
It just goes in a different bucket, it goes in a different category. But yes, you would expect that.
Yeah.
You would also then, it would be, I mean, look, if all 115 charges are proven, it would be something so massive as well that you would be getting into other factors. Maybe even would they take into account what's good for the Premier League? Would it be good for the Premier League to relegate City?
Yeah.
Would it be better for the Premier League if they said, okay, City's owners, you guys pay a £1 billion fine, let's say, which gets distributed among the other clubs. I mean, I'm saying hypothetically,
right? Yeah.
you get into such an extreme situation that I don't see how you can use Everton's case as any kind of benchmark.
Yeah,
right?
I see what you mean.
And this is a lot more complicated. This is going to get going. It's funny, and I go back to this. Pep Guardiola saying, you know, I want this case resolved quickly. I want to know if they cheated so we can move on,
yeah,
up or down. I'm like, you know what? If this is what you really want, you again, in the same way I told Klopp to go and speak to his bosses, yeah, and his owners, Pep, you speak to your owners. Tell the lawyers to stop getting injunctions, stop slowing things down, to cooperate, because that's another thing we've been charged with, yeah, not cooperating. You know, it's a different situation. With Chelsea, what I find interesting, we've touched upon this before, so yeah, Chelsea self-reported, and when Boehly and Clear Lake bought the club, they did the due diligence, looked at the books and says, wait, this doesn't add up. We think, yeah, there's some malfeasance here. We're not going to pay the full $2.5 billion. We're going to put $100 million aside for potential future fines and punishment, right? So they did that. They self-reported to UEFA. UEFA gave them a fine of, I think, 10 million euros. And the thing with Chelsea is it fair? If Chelsea made illegal payments, yeah, and benefited from them, and again, we're not talking about the size of it or the impact. These are mostly payments to agents, but they're payments that would have come out of Chelsea's, yeah, books, right?
Exactly.
If this was Roman Abramovich's Chelsea who did it, none of those people work at the club anymore. Is it fair to punish the club?
But you said there's no time limit.
Right.
In the Premier League rules. So
what is a fair punishment for that? Do you dock Todd Boehly points? At which point Todd Boehly might have said, hey, why did I come forward and cooperate, yeah, then? I had nothing to do with this.
That's why we think that also Chelsea have done this in cooperation almost with the Premier League, saying, okay, we are going to give ourselves up to you, but don't be maybe too harsh in return and just fine us, even if it's a heavy fine. Yeah. We'll take that instead of point deduction. I agree with you. However, you could also say that if Eden Hazard in the end went to Chelsea and not to Arsenal, because Arsenal didn't want to pay a dodgy commission to his agent, John Biko, which Chelsea and Abramovich were happy to do.
It's not a dodgy commission, it's a big commission.
It's a big commission, but in dodgy in the sense that...
It's how they paid it. If proven, by the way.
If proven, of course. Then
Chelsea got the benefit of Eden Hazard. Well, here's the thing.
For all those years, and when they won all those trophies. Okay.
So this is where you get into it, right? So Chelsea get the benefit of Eden Hazard for all those years, and they win trophies, right? They won the Europa League, they won the Premier League.
Yeah.
And so, maybe I revisit those titles. Maybe I take some of them away. But then do you also punish Chelsea? So it's one thing stripping titles from the past, which personally I don't care about.
They've
come and gone. But do you punish Chelsea now? Because Todd Boehly and Clear Lake, they bought Chelsea thinking those trophies, again, we're in the hypothetical, whatever, and we draw a direct line between us. They bought Chelsea thinking that those trophies were legitimately won, and they paid $2.5 billion.
For that,
Chelsea hadn't won anything. If their brand were worth less,
surely
would have paid less.
Yeah.
So I think we're in this fascinating thing where you publish a club as an entity versus punishing the owner.
Yeah.
And does an owner have to come with risks, you know?
I know. It's a good debate.
It's honestly, this is, you know my views on lawyers, this is a legal cluster mess. What I do know is legal scholars are going to have a lot of fun debating this, and lawyers will be racking up those billable hours.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, enough boring financial stuff. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Brazil lose to Colombia 2-1 in Barranquilla. Jules, it's now 1 point from three games for Fernando Diniz.
Diniz in the oven. I've said to you before, I'm not a big fan of managers who have two jobs. like a club and a national team. Like it's for him, it's really rare.
Like Louis van Gaal did.
Yeah, for example.
It's another one of your favorites.
So yeah, we saw how that went. Because I don't know if he's preparing for the Copa Libertadores final and not really focusing on Brazil or the other way around. I'm not sure. This has been very disappointing. The defeat against Colombia was very disappointing. Luis Diaz scoring two goals, his dad in the stands going almost fainted with joy and emotions and everything. Okay. But now you play Argentina on the back of a defeat for them too, and we will talk about that in a little bit. And you're not in a good shape, and you don't have Vinicius because you got injured, as we're going to mention in the next quick hit. You have a lot of players that are injured. Yes, of course, they're going to qualify because they're Brazil. However, this is just not looking great in a year that is a year that maybe doesn't really count in fairness. I know there's the Copa America at the end of the year, at the season, but we also know that at some point there will be another manager in charge and not Diniz.
Well, it could have been Diniz if they were doing better. Yeah. I mean, look, those don't qualify because also it's 7 out of 10 teams, right? But just psychologically, if Argentina do them in a bad way,
In the Maracanã,
then there could be some serious blowback. And remember, too, they don't have another game after this, I would assume, until March, right?
Yeah.
That is a lot of weeks to stew and wonder what went on.
Yeah.
It's a shame, too, for your boy Martinelli. I thought he looked really good.
Yeah.
He's one of the bright spots in that game.
Yeah, definitely. And as we just mentioned, the major injury blow for the Seleção and Real Madrid was that injury to Vinicius Jr., who's unlikely to return before February, Gab.
Yeah, this is a different angle than the one he was injured at the start of the season. I think this is pretty open shot for me, right? You'll come back, but at this point, I start wondering, is he going to get hurt again? Yeah. I was skeptical about going into the season with just Vinicius, Rodrigo, and Joselu up front.
Yeah,
I think you take, January 1st, bring in another body. You know what? You've already kind of lost your virginity, so to speak, in terms of bringing in veterans on loan. Bring in another veteran striker on loan. I don't care who it is. Bring in another body because you are one injury away from what? Yeah. Joselu, Brahim Diaz, Valverde front line. But then there's nobody in midfield because Camavinga and Tchouaméni are also hurt.
Yeah,
and
Modric
is
a long list now for Real Madrid, isn't it?
I think you need another body just to take the pressure off of Vinicius where he comes from, where he doesn't need to start every single game. Scotland and Norway draw 3-3 to confirm what we already knew. Scotland qualify and Norway are out. They don't even have a back door via the playoffs at this stage.
Nope.
Jules, there was no Erling Haaland, but still, this is not good.
That's not good from Norway. I mean, that game was just a profile friendly, really, because there was nothing to play for. And at the end, there was a big party at Hampden Park for Scotland to qualify again for the Euros, which is good for them. I just don't know how Norway, with so much talent that they have on the pitch, certainly in terms of the starting 11. Maybe if you look down the plan B, plan C, the other options, it's not maybe as good. But I'm sorry, they've got some really good youngsters. They've got Haaland, they've got Odegaard, they've got good defenders. They should do much better than what they've done in these qualifiers.
We've had this. We had Jan on, obviously on to talk about this. He'd dispute how good some of the defenders are, perhaps. It is an odd one.
It is.
Haaland, by the way, missed this game through injury. It looks like he's going to be fine for the big game against Liverpool on Saturday.
Exactly. Italy beat North Macedonia last week 5-2.
How about that?
Which means that a draw away to Ukraine on Monday night, so tonight as we're recording the show, is enough to qualify. Gab, are you nervous?
Why would I be nervous? We missed the last two freaking World Cups.
Exactly.
Why would I be nervous? I've already dealt with the pain.
It's not good for you.
You can't kill somebody three times.
Well,
you cannot kill somebody who's already dead inside.
And you're you're obviously the holders as well of this Euro, so it would be even worse if you were not there to defend your title. And what did you make of Alexander Seferin, your friend, the UEFA president, basically saying that it would be a disaster if Italy didn't qualify?
So, first of all, thanks, Alex, because, Ukraine need more motivation,
definitely,
right? Their country's at war. They're saying we're fighting for our soldiers on the front line. They're getting bombs dropped on them. And look, also, we're getting disrespected. Now, to be fair to Seferin, I think he said this like a month ago, but it's one of those quotes that gets dug up again.
I know.
Like, I don't know if something was lost in translation. I don't know if he meant, it would be a disaster for UEFA. It would be an embarrassment if the holders of the competition don't qualify next time around.
Yeah.
Maybe he meant that, but certainly I think if he could, he wishes he could have that quote back. It was a tasty clash between Argentina and Uruguay, with Ronald Araujo and Darwin Núñez giving Marcelo Bielsa's crew the win. Jules, okay, it's a defeat. Anything for the world champions to be concerned
about? I know you don't think so. Okay, they hadn't conceded in 725 minutes or so.
Since the World Cup final.
Yeah, you conceded two goals.
Kylian Mbappe is the last human to have scored against them.
Yeah, before Darwin and Araujo, at the end of each half, which I don't think is ever good. You have to be concerned in how you play during the game. I don't think
so. The second one's on the counter at the end of the game. What do you mean, Zach?
Yeah, because they were pushing for it.
Yeah, but they're trying to equalize.
I said that they conceded twice at the end of each half. That's all I said. Right. But I don't think there's anything to be concerned. But it's never good to lose, especially in a game like this where the rivalry is quite big.
I do wonder a little bit going forward. I know Otamendi kind of had a renaissance over the last 18 months and everything.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, is he really going to be part of Japan's post-Copa America?
Can't be. That's surely the last season for him. And in that game, Manuel Ugarte upset a few people, Gabby, with an obscene gesture towards Rodrigo De Paul after Leo Messi was fouled and De Paul came in to do the justice, as he always does. And Messi didn't like this at all.
Yeah. So Messi came out, and it's funny because he's little, I still think of Messi as being kind of like a kid. I don't expect him to be like the old guy in the corner, like saying, "Hey, young MC," but that's what he did. He said, "These young players have a lot to learn. The Uruguay are a good group, but they have to learn respect from their Uruguayan elders because this Clásico is always intense, hard, but always a lot of respect. So they have to learn a little." I gotta be really unkind just because I can't resist.
Yeah.
Do they have to learn the respect from their Uruguayan elder who goes and bites opponent not once, not twice, but three times? Is that the respect?
I think that's what he means.
Or does it just apply to bitings, but, obscene gestures? And by the way, if you see what he did, it's very visible. It's also really, really, really childish.
Yes.
Like, if you do this, you don't get offended. You just think, what a weirdo and a loser this guy is.
That's
honestly
not Ugarte at all. He never does anything like that.
Because he doesn't need to for Paris Saint-Germain.
No, I know, but still,
But whatever. I like Messi pulling rank. Fair enough. I got no issue with it.
Yeah, me neither.
Spain win their group, defeating Georgia 3-1 as Kvaratskhelia opens the scoring. But Jules, the news is all about Gavi and his injury.
Yeah, terrible knee injury. Gavi did his cruciate, be out for 7 to 9 months. It's hard to tell, but it will be long. He will miss the whole rest of the season, which is a huge blow for Barcelona and Xavi.
He's going to miss the Euros too.
Because he will miss the Euros,
When people say 7 months, I know, like Totti, I think, holds the record for coming back in 122 days or whatever it was, but you don't come back the same straight away. It still takes you a lot of time.
There's no Euros for him. It's a big man. I won't lie. De La Fuentes changed 9 players between the 2 games, the Cyprus game and the Georgia game. 9 out of 11. Gavi was one of the two that stayed on the pit, that started both. I don't understand. I really don't get why. I don't understand why. We had the same discussion about Pedri. Remember when they took him to the Olympics after he played at the Euros or whatever it was, the under 21 Euros maybe or something. He played 1,000 games that year. And guess what? Since then, he's hardly been able to play 3 or 4 months in a row without getting injured or something. Let's not do the same mistake with Gavi, please.
Especially because if there's one area where Spain aren't lacking, is it's in midfielders who can pass the ball in irrelevant games against the relevant
opposition.
They're
qualified already. Play the B team, the C teams, who play Soler and Fabian Ruiz and all that.
But I guess was there a chance that if Scotland won and Spain lost to Georgia that... I think so.
Maybe.
They could have passed it when they first play. If you change 9 men, why Gavi? Whatever.
I know.
This is a blow for Barcelona, though. This is a serious blow, I think, incredible. In terms of leadership.
But lacking creativity as well?
I'm guessing, Pedri can supply the creativity if he's fit
if he's fit, Frankie's going to come back at some point.
Frankie's going to come back to supply the leadership. But with Gavi, you have the creativity and the leadership in one.
It's terrible. France beat up Gibraltar 14-0. A record, of course, for us. Gab, did you learn anything other than Gibraltar are really bad? And they're even worse when they're down to 10 men after 17 minutes?
No, I learned absolutely nothing. I saw the story of Didier Deschamps at halftime say, come on, let's go for the record.
Of course.
That's fine. It leaves me... I'm not saying he was wrong to do that.
You don't like it.
Everybody padded their stats. That's great. There's a broader conversation to be had. about Gibraltar in games like these. And that's it. I love the fact that it's like 11-0. Giroud scores, and then they have a VAR check. I know.
You have
respect
to.
The game, respect the VAR.
Did you like Kylian's lob? You like Kylian's lob?
Not as much as I love Giroud's overhead kick with his wrong foot as well.
Kylian, no, it was in the left foot, I think.
You're lobbing the Gibraltar goalkeeper.
It doesn't matter. 3 goals, 3 assists. He celebrated the lob, the hat trick, like if it was 0-0 and the 90th
minute. Let's not go there. Warren Zaïre-Emery made his debut in that Gibraltar game, scored a goal, and picked up a nasty injury. Jules, he's very young. He's going to bounce back, right?
Yeah, he will. It's only like a sprained ankle, badly sprained. So it's nothing too serious. It could have been worse. I think he could have broken his ankle easily.
While he was shooting on goal, yeah?
Yes, literally on the goal. As he shot, Santos comes in and like tackled from the side, straight the studs on his ankle.
I was struck because he's on the ground and he's like wincing and grimacing. And I thought, and the players are coming to celebrate with him. I thought, like, oh, wow, he's so happy. And then I think even some of the players were coming over to celebrate. And it's like, oh, my God, he's really hurt.
Yeah, I saw it straight away. He would miss, I think, the next 2 months. He won't play again in 2023, which I think is a big loss. We said about Gavi for Barca, having him for PSG. I know he's only 17, and he really should not be. You should not be suffering from losing a 17-year-old, but I think we will.
Champions League.
Yeah,
Newcastle in town.
Monaco on Friday night. To start with, it's a big game. They are the other best team in the league so far.
And what is this disrespect for Nice? What is this disrespect?
They're not as good as
Nice.
Monaco and PSG. Come on.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Julian Nagelsmann loses his first game in charge of Germany, only as his third attempt. That's pretty good. As they fall to Turkey at home. 3-2, Gabby.
So, yeah. So 3-2, it could have been worse,
yeah,
by the way.
It should have been worse.
Kevin Trapp, the Trapp monster, who I don't think is a very good goalkeeper.
Because Destegen was injured as well.
He was really good in this game. Yeah, and by the way, when I read it, people are like, oh, look, all these players are out for Germany. I'm like, who's out? Like, okay, Musiala's out. All right, fine. Like,
Destegen is still better than Trapp.
Musiala and Ter Stegen, yeah. But, I mean,
that was it?
You're playing Turkey at home. You know, gobble, gobble. I know Thanksgiving's coming up, but still.
Yeah.
But again, I'm Team Nagelsmann. You want to experiment? You play Havertz at left back.
That's dreadful.
This is not the reason they lost. Maybe it's something to revisit. Maybe it's a 3+1 left back. I don't know. This is the time to experiment.
The midfield?
The midfield. The Gundogan Kimmich thing is just like, it's just like people slice through them all the time. And I think, you know what? I'm not blaming Kimmich here. I'm blaming Gundogan.
Are you?
Yeah. I mean,
I just don't think either of them helped the other. It's almost like they never played with each other before. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Look. There's a long way to go, and I do believe, because I'm Team Nagelsmann, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Give him the players 3 weeks before the Euros, train every day, try new formations, try stuff, not like this once here, once there, two training sessions.
We'll see.
They still have Musiala and Zana. They're going to be all right.
Okay.
Can't believe I'm sticking up for Germany. Portugal end their qualifying campaign with a 2-0 win over Iceland, which makes it 10 wins out of 10 for our boy Roberto Martinez.
Yeah.
Jules, I feel like we're kind of sleeping on them.
We know, but this is the easiest group by far that they fall into. And I'm not saying it's not.
What are you talking about? Iceland, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg.
I think they scored like 38 goals or 36 in those 10 games. It's great and well done. They've got.
They're like Bayer Leverkusen.
But it's the same team as under Fernando Santos. I think he only called up two new players since he took over. So
one of them being my man Horta.
Huh? Yeah, but no, they're good. They're very good. They're going to be amongst the favorites at the Euros, and rightly so. That's it.
You know what's different about this team? Is Fernando Santos isn't there.
No,
Roberto approaches this game
differently. For sure.
I think he's still going to have a tough call to do with Cristiano.
Yeah, of course. But for now, it's working.
For now, it's working.
Romelu Lukaku scores 4 goals as Belgium beat Azerbaijan 5-0, and who go down to 10 men as well, a bit like Gibraltar. Gab, assuming Harry Kane doesn't score 7 goals tonight against North Macedonia, he will end up as the top goal scorer in the qualifiers.
Yes, or assuming Gavi Fattesi doesn't go and score 13 goals against Ukraine. No, look, it's just a tremendous from him.
4 goals in the first half.
What I liked about this, and it's a different approach, right? We talked about running up the score against the opposition. It's 4-0, 36 minutes, and they say, all right, no mas, right? Leandro Trossard scored one in garbage time at the end. It's a different way to approach things, and one that personally I'm more comfortable with. Speaking of England, they play in a few hours, and these are basically friendlies for them because they're guaranteed first place. But Jules, what did you think of their performance against Malta, specifically Fikayo Tomori left back? Who do you like more, Fikayo Tomori left back or Kai Havertz left back?
At least I'll have a left-footed player at left back, so I'll have Kai Havertz. I failed for Tomori in that game. I think he's been deserved a chance for England. And then for Southgate to play him at left back is just beyond me. I mean, you know how much I dislike Gareth Southgate as a manager, not as a person. I don't think he's a good manager or head coach at all. And that game against Malta reminded me of, and I know it was not England's best team. There was no Bellingham, no Rice, no Saka, no whatever you want. But for Jordan Henderson still to play for England right now, really? For Tomori to play at left back, even for Harry Maguire to play in that game, it was such a poor performance from England. Apart from the second goal, which there was a little bit of something, the rest was dreadful from start to finish. And
what about Harry Kane booked for? Oh, they should have had a penalty. Should have been. But forget the score. It's the performance. Look, I know it's different.
The performance was terrible.
But what I don't understand is you're playing Malta, right, at home, so you know you're going to have a lot of the ball, right? All right, you don't have a left back. Why are you making Tomori? Who, let's face it, Itamar is he's fast, he's athletic, he's intelligent. Yeah, yeah. He's not Beckenbauer on the ball. Not only are you playing Tomori out of position, but you're doing it in a game in which, what, you expect him to go and provide the width and run up and down
it's
the
just
wing?
So
like,
bad.
I don't get it. Like, take on opponents?
I know, it's so bad from Southgate. Really, like, I don't understand.
Play Saka there. He's played there before.
Play Rico Lewis there. It's not like if you don't have any other options. You can easily play somebody else there. Why Tomori? What, you want to see him in that position? It doesn't bring anything to Tomori, to England, or to Southgate. It's just... I hope for him he wins the Euro, Southgate. Because otherwise, I will destroy him so badly. This is such a great squad that they have. And yet, Leroy Sané's contract is up in 2025, Gabby. So it's extension time, of course. It's inevitable that he gets linked with pretty much every single team in the world, especially Liverpool, and even a return to Manchester City.
Yeah, so look, I'm just highlighting this because you probably would have seen these stories right, about a return to the Premier League where he did so well. I mean, to be fair to him, he had one really good season and then he was injured and up and down. People are talking about him. Oh, maybe he could be a replacement for Mohamed Salah. Leroy Sané right now is playing some of the best footballs of his career. And he's doing it in a role which is completely different from Mohamed Salah. Let's just go and forget about that. Obviously, when Salah leaves, whether it's the Saudi this summer or, you know, after this year, he's only have 1 year left on his contract. Because Salah makes a lot of money, you're going to have a big chunk of change. You can accommodate Sané's salary, maybe save yourself a little something to go and buy somebody like that. But Bayern, I don't think they're going to let him go easily.
Definitely not.
If you're Bayern, you've spent so much on Kane, your window of opportunities now. I think Sané... I don't want to say he's Bayern's best player because Harry Kane's there and he's going to be but he's pretty darn close.
Yeah, exactly. He's been outstanding this season.
I think he's going to get a new deal.
Yeah, for sure.
A return to City? No. They got Doku. It didn't quite work out the first time around.
Exactly.
Should we give a big shout out to all the other teams who qualify but we haven't mentioned yet? Woo! Switzerland, woo! Romania, Holland, Hungary, Serbia, Denmark, woo! And of course... Albania with our buddies Silvinho and Pablo Zabaleta.
Oh, Silvinho, if you haven't seen it, go and check his celebration after they won the game on Friday night. It was where he high-fives people in the stand, on the first row of the stands. But it's not a high-five like you would give, hey, I'm happy. It's like he smashes their hands. It's like the strongest high-five you would ever see in your life. Because Silvinho was really happy after what happened to him at Lyon, where he was really disrespected. It lasted, 2 minutes or something? Good. Pablo Zabaleta providing, you know... what Pablo Zabaleta provides. He's great for Albania, good generation, of course, and for all the others. And we still have a few, of course, missing, like Ukraine and Italy, for example.
Haven't played yet. One of those two. I'm pretty sure one of those two will qualify.
Yeah, and then a lot of playoff finals too. And
I'll say this about Savinho and Zabaleta, a little bit of a lid here, right? As people who work in football and stuff and talk to players, there are some players who are far more approachable than others and who talk a lot more and who generally are more civil and more interesting and have better personalities. And you know what? Because we're humans, people who are nicer, we're generally nicer back to them.
Yeah.
Savinho and Zabaleta, when they're players, were people who always picked up a phone, would always talk to you. They were always fair. They were always available. They were always kind. They never were too high on themselves. They're absolute class acts.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a coincidence, by the way, because, you know, game recognizes game. Like, who did Chichi call to be his assistant with Brazil? Savinho.
Yeah.
Because these are also smart people, people who learn.
That's very true.
So I am delighted that they're doing well. I thought of them as kind of like an odd couple at first, but, you know.
It's working. And Pablo Zabaleta, ESPN legend, of course.
Of course.
So, you know, we send all our love. Gab, it's not just the France-Gibraltar game. We've seen some really uneven matches in this international break. Is this a problem? And what can FIFA, UEFA do about it?
So, is it a problem? I mean, I think you open Pandora's box when you let countries that, I say this in the nicest possible way, aren't really countries in the sense that they're not recognized by the United Nations and their whatever Gibraltar is supposed to be. You know, why not Jersey? Why not Guernsey? Well, the Faroes, right?
Yeah.
Does it, you know, I was on the show with Craig Burley. He says, like, oh, look, it's all about developing the game, right? This really develops the game in Gibraltar. You know, think of all those young Gibraltarians.
No, they've got the Nations League where they play against teams of their level.
That's fine. No, no.
And then at some point, we have to have qualifiers for Euros where they play against.
I'm wondering if we aren't heading towards a situation or we shouldn't seriously consider the fact that we should just scrap this World Cup qualifying and figure out some formula involving the Nations League, some playoff games, a pathway. Well, maybe.
Because if the teams of the level of Gibraltar have one qualified for the Euros, then at the Euros, they're going to get battered by everybody like they do in the qualifiers.
Right. But if to qualify for the Euro, I mean, we've seen Latvia, we've seen North Macedonia go to World Cup. So we've seen small teams do
it.
You know, I was surprised. Liechtenstein at one point, they were drawing with Luxembourg at halftime, and Luxembourg had a man sent off. And I said, wow, look at this. And I went back to see, like, oh, you know, might they get a point? And I'd say, like, Liechtenstein routinely win one or two.
They won
six games. And I'm like,
and Luxembourg could have qualified, as there was a point where they were still in the running for qualifying.
I don't know what you do with them. It's easy to say, oh, have them do pre-qualifying. And then the problem with pre-qualifying is there's only so many dates in the international calendar, right? They can't pre-qualify.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, as they look, should we just use the Nations League to have the Nations League, have a playoff tournament, and just do it that way? Because I don't enjoy this.
I know.
It doesn't help. You know, this isn't like Panama playing Brazil for like the only time in their life, and they'll talk about it.
Yeah, I sure mean.
No, Gibraltar is going to go and they'll play France again and again, and they'll they'll give up double figures and goals.
No, I know.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Jules, you know how much I love Super Cups. And yes, they're really real trophies.
They are.
Now, with the Stade de France being closed because of this annoyance called the Olympics, and of course, they didn't play Paris Saint-Germain against Toulouse in the summer because
the daughter of the Thailand king or something was not well. So they postponed it, something like that. The game was supposed to be in Thailand or Indonesia or Malaysia, somewhere like that.
I hope she's okay now.
Yeah, she is.
So I've seen reports that they're going to play this in Congo.
So it won't be Congo, I think. It will be Congo next year in 2024. This time it should be at the Parc des Princes, which obviously the PhD player will feel very uneasy with.
I'm sorry. Can you just explain this, please, right? The whole point is it's supposed to be neutral territory, right?
Yeah, ideally. Well, yeah.
I mean,
Stade de France is usually... Well, it used to be, and then they
started... Stade de France is a national stadium. That's fine.
Yeah. And then they started thinking like, hey, let's go abroad for the Trophée des Champions.
That's fine.
So they went to Canada, to Israel, to somewhere in Africa, East Asia, whatever.
But why are you playing at Paris Saint-Germain's home stadium? Like,
I don't know.
Okay, I can understand. Okay, you'd want to. I don't know what's geographically in between. I mean, I suppose you can't do it in. But it's probably safety reasons why you can't play in Marseille or in Nice.
You probably
trouble with the fans, right?
Yeah, probably.
You played in Bordeaux.
I know.
Go the other way, right?
I know.
Or Lens is a nice stadium. My friend Joseph.
Yeah, Joseph Orion. I don't know why.
Played in Lyon. I'm sure John Texter would be happy to host.
No, it's a big stadium. Groupama. Although, same for security reasons. Maybe I really don't know why they would do at the Parc des Princes. I mean, Congo tried in the last few days to get it, but it looked like they were set on Parc des Princes and would give it to Congo next year.
So, well, look, it's nice that they're not whoring themselves out for just a big wad of money from Saudi or Qatar or whatever,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You know, because I'm sure they're doing this in Congo for... I don't know. I don't want to look under the hood. I hope this benefits the Congolese economy.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, let's agree to that. Olivier Giroud is old, as you know, our friend. Luka Jovic looks like a dude, as you put it. Gab, does that make sense, though, that Milan then should go for Jonathan David, who hasn't had a great start of the season at Lille, but has been scoring a lot in recent seasons?
Yeah, so this is... So obviously Milan kind of realizing... Kjovic didn't cost him very much, and they said, okay, look, let's try this. It's just that the guy's just not... I mean, there's just... He's like the guy from Charlie Brown that has, like, the cloud of dust. He's got a cloud of negativity and poo around him, and he just can't do it.
But there were times at Fiorentina where he looked like, okay, maybe he's on his way back towards the player we saw at Frankfurt.
Because at Fiorentina, they were shooting on goal 500 million times.
He saw the ball all the time.
So the idea is Jonathan David, who, you know, in the summer, Jonathan David might have cost you 60, 70, maybe even 80 million.
Yeah.
Maybe he had a bad start to the season. But you tell me, why did he have a bad start to the season?
I don't know. Our friend Paulo Fonseca went for different... So he went through like a goal drought where...
He's got 2 goals in 12 games.
Yeah, so he scored on penalties and then just missing chances. So Paulo Fonseca said, okay, let's try something different. You come off the bench and I play Yazici as a force number 9, for example, which is the idea now. And that has worked really well for Lille. And Paulo Fonseca, as you know well, because you know him well, is like, well, this is working. I'm not going to change and bring back Jonathan David into the starting lineup when he's clearly low on confidence. And I've got Yazici playing really well. We saw him with Turkey against Germany playing really well in the same position. So, perfect. And that's why. So now he's what? He's a 40 million striker now?
I think at 40 million, given he's 23 years old, I know Milan like always like to try to balance the books and something. But I think there's a ton of value in him. His country's hosting the World Cup in 2026.
Yeah.
It's the right age profile. I think they were hoping that Okafor could maybe play center forward in some situations. They don't want to play Leao there. But obviously, you can't ask Giroud to play every game.
No.
Zlatan's hanging around.
You know who they like as well? I was told Ako Adams, the Montpellier striker, who is doing really well in Ligue 1 this season after moving from Scandinavia in the summer. And I think, again, young, very powerful, strong. Really interesting guy.
Okay, but he's not going to be a £40 million.
No, he's much cheaper than that. But that's why I think they also like the idea, and the data adds up quite well.
Qatar Sports Investment, majority owners of Paris Saint-Germain,
I'll take anything,
are reportedly looking to sell a minority stake in the club.
Yes.
Why, Jules? Is he running out of money?
They want different ideas. They want more money coming from somewhere else, especially with the new stadium. We're not really sure what's going to happen, either to the Parc des Princes and make it bigger and refurbish it, or going somewhere else, either the Stade de France or even a brand new stadium. So all of this is possible. And I just think, like, for I think 11% or 12% they're looking for.
Are there any numbers on the valuation of the club?
Not yet, no.
Because I'm going to be so curious about this, because obviously Liverpool at $3 billion, zilch. United, they monitored it, ultimately did it at $5 billion. Chelsea, we know, went for $2.5 billion.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they pretend it's $4.25 billion with this extra investment over the next 10 years. I'm really curious, because Paris Saint-Germain is a brand, right?
Yeah.
If you look, the global imprint is a super, super strong brand. Obviously, they're not in the Premier League. But then again, you wonder, like, what are the losses like every year?
Yeah.
Without that crutch, and for 10%, what am I buying? Or 11%?
Yeah, that's
fine. Like, do I have any say? Do I have a seat at the table? Because there's not a situation, like Manchester United, where he's going to scale up or he can demand more
yeah,
of the set.
Yeah, yeah.
Nasser's going to be like, true. My club. But you know what they should ask? I can think of a guy, the QSI probably already know him, in fact, who really wants to be involved with football because he loves football. What about Sheikh Jassim?
Oh, he missed on United. Hey.
Yeah, maybe he can buy 10%.
Come and work with your cousins. Yeah, why not? Why not? David De Gea, of course, is a free agent, as everybody knows, and he supposedly has turned down another big offer from Al Nassr. But there's somewhere else he really would like to go, though.
Yeah, this is like one of those things where, sure, why not? Yeah. Inter Miami.
Of course. Yeah.
If Inter Miami also pay him half a million a week,
yeah?
Sure, he can get it done. Look, I think, but so Al Nassr actually need a goalkeeper because they have one guy who's old. Ospina's injured.
Yeah.
The guy who's been starting is like 22, 23. So there is some footballing basis to this. But the guy's obviously, I think he's made so much money from Manchester United.
Clearly.
That, the reports are his wife doesn't want to move to Saudi. And that, with all due respect, I've never met his wife. I'm imagining the appeal of Miami is going to be greater than the appeal of Saudi to her. And but I tell you what, if he goes to Miami, he's gonna have to play on the cheap. But this is what I understand about footballers, right? With all the money David De Gea has made,
yeah,
you have a chance to play with Lionel Messi, to live in Miami for a year or two. Why wouldn't you do it even at whatever the MLS minimum wage is?
But
why?
He might do that. You don't know.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. Mehdi Benatia is a new sporting director at Marseille, Jules. I was a big fan of his as a player until the end when he was no longer good and he got injured. And I always thought he was a bright guy. Does this mean he's going to be any good as general manager recruitment guy?
We will see. He obviously was an agent before, quite a successful one too. So he had to give that up. And I think the process took a long time because I don't think it was easy for him to let go that side of the business. But you could not be an agent, as we saw with Deco at Barcelona. You could be an agent and a sporting director. Or, maybe you can keep a bit of relationship there and there. But we will have to see.
He's too smart. Like, I want to say this about look, I maybe he'll prove me wrong, right?
Yeah.
So the joke is, obviously, he's got his agency and like, oh, yeah, I'll get my dog. He's now in charge, or I'll get my brother or whatever. Right. But really, he's the man behind the scenes. I think he's too smart for that. I think he knows that if he wants to be a director of football, he's got to avoid all these potential conflicts.
So you have to properly
cut the ties. Yeah, otherwise, people will always grumble. People will always cast doubt on you. And presumably you want to treat Marseille as, I say it's a nice possible way, as a stepping stone, maybe to a bigger job one day, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the idea.
So, do you think he and Reno are going to get along?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously the language is there already because Benatia speaks very good Italian. And
wait, Gattuso hasn't learned French yet?
Not yet. Only a few words, as you know. But I would hope so. I think it's good. I mean, they're very hot-tempered personalities. So let's see. There might be a couple of clashes, but if it works well, I think that could be good. Vladimir Soufal, Jakub Brabec and Jan Kuchta were all sent home from the Czech Republic camp because they had a late night out before their crucial qualifier against Moldova. They all went clubbing, didn't they? Are you okay with this hard line?
I am very okay with this hard line.
But
and look,
what player thinks they would go out like that, not get noticed? That is a good idea.
I don't even know where they went out. Like what? You would assume they're going to be recognized, right?
100%.
I think it's a big miscalculation. I think the FA are doing the right thing and really taking a hard line with them. I think, the lift that you're going to get. This Moldova game, not a gimme at all. Moldova can still qualify.
They can still qualify.
As you were saying, if they screw this up, they're going to miss out again.
Yeah.
And I don't think... And then, if you're the FA, you can blame these three dudes for it. I think it would have been far worse from the FA's perspective if you include them and then you screw up.
Yeah.
If you see what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, no, you don't disrespect
That's
your teammates,
so
your national team Come by on, behaving like this. It. Seriously? There was a record crowd for women's football at Old Trafford, the Theater of Dreams,
yes.
I used to call it. 43,615 watched Manchester United and Manchester City.
It was the first ever derby, a women's derby, at Old Trafford ever. I mean, obviously, we know why, because for a long time, United didn't have a women's team. And that was great to see.
Also, for a long time, City didn't have a women's team either.
True, very true. It was great. City won 3-1. Chloe Kelly was a star. It was just a lot of things happening. Goals disallowed. There's no VAR in the WSL, of course. And there was
we know from our champions, women's champions league
as well, yeah, which is bad enough. And this time we had a similar event to the Joe Willock. Is the ball out or no out in the Newcastle Arsenal game? This one is the same. JC scored for United to make it 2-0, by the way. And the goal was disallowed because the referee said the ball had crossed the line, although on TV you could not be sure or not. But after that, there was a lot. There was a red card. There were goals. There was a United pushing towards the end to come back. But it's a good City win in a derby. And let's hope that there are many more to come out, Trafford.
By the way, I emphasize the number because it's a record crowd. But before people start making comparisons and things like that, there's a lot that we don't know. Like, what was the average ticket price and whatnot? If the average ticket price was a reasonable amount of money, this is a tremendous result.
Yeah, I would expect it's £20
about the growth of the women's game.
£20 a ticket for adults, £5 for children. It's usually what it is when WSL team plays, like Arsenal at the Emirates, like Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, like City at the Etihad. Those kind of numbers. So that's really decent. Hendrik says that while Messi is a phenomenal guy, I'm more of a Cristiano Ronaldo fan. You must be shocked.
I am so shocked.
So shocked.
I am so shocked that the guy who is facing Lionel Messi in a couple of days, and the guy who is moving to Real Madrid is going to pick Cristiano over Lionel Messi. Look, the guy also, Hendrik's Brazilian, Messi's from Argentina. It is perhaps, actually, for my money, it's the second greatest rivalry in world football after Italy v Germany.
Of course.
Anybody playing against Germany.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, no, I don't think this is news. I think this the poor guy. I think you got to ask this question. This is exactly what I expect him to say. Maybe it's true.
Maybe it's true. That's what I was going to say.
But I also wish people would stop asking those questions because you know what? As I get older, I kind of feel like, unless you're from Argentina or from Portugal, if you pick Messi over Cristiano or if you pick Cristiano over Messi, kind of a tool.
I know. I just enjoy them both.
All right, Joseph, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Thursday.
Talking about Argentina, Brazil.
Talking about Argentina and Brazil. How about that? And looking forward to that irrelevant lunchtime match on Saturday, Liverpool and City. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.